From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fourth day of February 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity market with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll do an in-depth dive as it relates to the changing weather patterns in both the northern and the southern hemispheres with meteorologist Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $5.50 even. That was too lower. The May contract at $5.47.5, down 1.5 in December. The new crop at $4.51.75 a bushel, 0.75 cents higher for the day. March soybeans at $13.72.5, up a penny and a quarter. The May at $13.69.25, 1.75 cents higher. And November beans $11.60.25, 4 cents higher for the day. The March bean meal at $433.10 a ton, down $2.40. The bean oil at $44.94, up 46 cents. Wheat futures, soft red, down 10.75. It finished at 637.5. And the hard red winter at 618.75 in the March, down 6.75 cents. Live cattle futures at $116.45, up 97.5 cents per 100 pounds in the February. April were $1.30 higher at $123.75, and June there at $120.20, up 72.5 cents. The feeder cattle nearby contract at $139.50, 97.5 cents higher, and lean hogs at $71.25, down $1.35 for the day. Crude oil at $56.22 a barrel, that's up 53 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $1.69.09, 8.6 cents higher, and the gasoline at $1.64.3 down 0.4 cents per gallon. Ethanol futures in Chicago at $1.71 were unchanged on this Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett at agmarket.net now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago and his view of the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Matt. You ready for the cold weather that's coming in?
Well, I guess I better be ready because it's going to get pretty nasty. It looks like kids are more excited about the potential to get a little bit of snow, but as far as the cold weather goes, there's no doubt it's pretty hard on stuff, especially livestock.
It is very hard on things, livestock, equipment, both logistics. And I don't know whether you will have much of a view on this, but are there logistical issues other than surrounding livestock, especially out west, anywhere that is outside? Are there logistical issues that you have to deal with? I mean, of course, we'd have the freezing of rivers and such, but I'm not sure whether it slows things down in other ways.
Well, I mean, there's no question it's tough on equipment. And so anyone who's feeding a ton of cattle with automation, you know, when you get temperatures that are excessively cold that you're not used to, you got to monitor things pretty closely. So, you know, we got to hope that nobody runs into any issues like that. And usually I think they're fairly well prepared for that kind of thing. But no doubt that they're going to be on heightened alert compared to what they would normally be when they're looking at, you know, temperatures 20, 30 degrees below what they see a lot of times this time of year.
Did the markets in Chicago take this into consideration at all on the livestock side as it traded through the day today or in recent days?
Yeah, I mean, the livestock market, I mean, fat cattle are up again today. Nice to see. To be honest with you, these front months, in my opinion, I wasn't expecting to see February and April cattle trade where they're at. I mean, you got April cattle settled today at 123.75. I didn't think that we were going to see 120s, if you'd asked me 6 weeks ago, till the third and fourth quarter, at least consistently, you know. And so you've got basically a little bit of a, it's kind of a wild market because you've got a $7 carry out to the April from this front month Feb, and then you've got an inverted market for a couple of months, and then you go back to a healthy carry market. So it's very interesting to see how everyone's looking at this market, but I do think that as far as livestock's concerned, they're going to be awfully good property this year. Demand stayed very strong.
The inversion because of shorter supplies or other reasons?
Well, I think it's, you know, shorter supplies here up front So you're going to have, I think, I mean, up front, I think you've got big weights, but as far as just making sure you can get all these cattle processed, I mean, obviously that's been a major concern that we've dealt with for quite some time. And so the cattle are available. It's just a matter of getting them all through the system. And I think it's something we're going to have to work our way through.
Yeah, and I suppose I was really thinking about a second quarter in the middle of that question. Mm-hmm. Turn your attention to the grains in particular. What happened in Chicago today?
Well, to be honest, with corn, it was a pretty quiet day. I mean, you say quiet, but I mean, 11 cent range. And so we've gotten used to some of these wilder trading ranges. I mean, actually, relatively speaking, you could probably say corn had a bigger range than beans, because beans are only a 17 cent range, which I say only once again. I mean, these 30 to 40 cent range days, have been fairly commonplace here lately. But, we saw a really good overnight market, some enthusiasm. I think most people were expecting to see big export sales. And then you come in here this morning and you actually had a little bigger export sales than what a lot of us thought we might see. So pretty exciting to see those types of things happen, over 7 million tons, which is certainly the biggest number we've ever seen. And so what have we seen lately? Well, whenever we get big numbers, a lot of times, you end up with a little bit of selling that comes into the market. And that's essentially what we saw. I mean, 7.4 million metric ton of corn and 824,000 metric ton of soybeans, as far as sales are concerned. And both of those numbers are significantly in excess of what we need to meet the pace.
What does this mean to USDA's World Agricultural Supply and Demand estimate figures for next week?
Big question. I mean, that's a big, big question. And so, whenever I look at it and I think to myself, I mean, what's the USDA going to do? You've got to think that they're going to increase exports. So they'll take back that 100 million that they dropped off the ledger last month. I feel very confident. Bare minimum would be to get that back, but I've got to think they'll go another 50 to 100 in excess of that. And so last month we lost 250 million bushels of demand. I'm not so sure that they can stick with that. Now, they may not make adjustments as far as ethanol and as far as feed and residual usage, but I've got to think that whenever you see, as far as exports have been concerned, the high prices have not curbed demand as some people might think that it would. They're going to have to make an adjustment. So I fully look for that 155 carryout to drop a couple hundred million bushels, maybe more. As far as soybeans are concerned, I look for the carryout to drop maybe 20, 25 million bushels. I just don't think the USDA wants to get super close to 100 million bushels. And anybody listening to this might think, well, gee whiz, they need to just say what the number is. And that's a complicated factor, and none of us can quite gauge just how tough it is to come up with those numbers. But they've got to outguess, what is these $13.70 to $14 prices? What are they going to do to demand on farther out? I personally think we're going to run out of beans essentially this year, which is going to necessitate that we're going to have to import some beans probably into the Southeast. And I think beans and bean meal are almost a foregone conclusion. We're going to see those come in. So carryout's super tight on beans right now.
And those soybeans would come in from South America. CONAB, like USDA, soon to update its figures. It was a very tough start to the year. Do you think USDA's number is dialed in for the Brazilian crop or South America in total? Will they have to make any changes next week?
Yeah, I don't see any big changes. I think, the USDA is probably going to raise, I think I could see them raising their Brazilian estimate, but they might have to drop a little bit as far as Argentina is concerned. So I think that the big unknown at this point, we know that Brazil is going to have a big bean crop. We know that it's going to be, first of all, they planted a ton of beans in that first crop. A lot of people say, what about the second crop? Well, that's where a predominant majority of the crop is planted to the safrinha crop, to corn. And so that's the big unknown moving forward, is what's this safrinha crop going to look like? We know it's going in the ground a little late, which most producers down there will tell you that's when they get a little bit nervous, because that dry season creeps in on them at the end of their growing season. But I don't know. For the most part, I don't expect any huge adjustments out of USDA as far as world numbers go whenever you look at the South American crop. I'd like to see them drop a few more bushels off the world ledger whenever it comes to corn. I think it's necessitated. I think China showed their cards there. Whether they do it or not, it remains to be seen.
Worth a note here that CONAB has not figured in second crop or safrinha corn into their current updates, but those should come out in this month. However, USDA has, and in conversations with them, they're already counting on a much larger second crop corn planted acreage. And because of how many acres of soybeans were planted in Brazil for their first crop. So that'll be interesting to watch as it develops. Is there anything else before I let you go for the day?
No, I just think that, as I always say, you know, these are awfully good prices, you know, and we have to know what they mean for us. So I encourage everyone to continue to monitor these very closely and how they impact your farm, and make sure that you're at least latching on to some of this. I'm not bearish by any means yet, but at the same time, you know, I don't want to let a good thing slip too far away.
We'll talk with you again later today for our recording of Commodity Week. Thanks for joining that program, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate to be a part of it.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. He will join us for the Thursday co-recording of Commodity Week, along with Garrett Toy from First Choice Commodities and Jerry Goodell of Midland Research. We'll post it to the website this evening. You'll hear it on this station and many stations tomorrow and over the weekend. In today's agricultural news, the ethanol industry sees long-term viability despite President Biden's push for greater climate protections, including all-electric vehicles by 2035. That's something that GM has already made a promise to do, even before President Biden took office. Renewable Fuels Association Chief Jeff Cooper is not worried the market for corn-based ethanol will suddenly disappear, though, if the president and the auto industry move to an electric fleet.
We're going to be using a lot of liquid fuels for a very long time in this country, even under the most aggressive scenarios to reach, you know, net zero emissions, you know, under aggressive plans to reduce and eliminate the use of fossil fuels.
Cooper says the transition to all-electric public and private vehicles will play out over decades, but Biden is pushing to end sales of gas-powered vehicles in less than 15 years and to rapidly convert the federal fleet. Cooper's calculation relies on continuing, even if declining, demand for liquid fossil fuels.
If we are incrementally using less gasoline and diesel fuel, as long as renewable fuels like ethanol represent an increasing share of the gasoline and diesel fuel consumption, then we can keep and even grow our current levels of production and demand, and that's what we're focused on.
But much of that will depend on reauthorizing the renewable fuel standard next year, Biden's climate strides, climate bills, and the nation's demand for higher ethanol blends as carmakers shift to more zero-emission vehicles. And finally today, a question in the Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer finds more farmers say they will get the COVID-19 vaccine. The Ag Economy Barometer for January, released this week, finds producers' attitudes about receiving a COVID-19 vaccine have shifted since the fall, with nearly 6 out of 10 producers, some 58%, planning to get vaccinated as soon as possible. Just 24% of producers said the same in October of last year. Still, 28% of farmers say they will not get the vaccine, compared with 37% in October. The Ag Economy Barometer is calculated each month from 400 U.S. agricultural producers' responses to a telephone survey. This month's survey was conducted from January 18 to 22. Last month, the Kaiser Family Foundation COVID-19 Vaccine Monitor reported 3 in 10 people in rural areas say they will definitely get the vaccine, compared to 4 in 10 in urban areas and suburban areas. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Gray, a little rain, a little snow today here. How about in Chicago?
Well, it's about to start snowing out, and it's going to snow fairly heavily here for a few hours. But it's not going to be a long-lasting storm like we saw a few days ago. But it is going to pack quite a punch, not only for the Chicago area, but for eastern Iowa and Wisconsin as well.
Well, let's dig into that just a little bit, because it seems to me that the patterns in the northern and the southern hemisphere, at least the growing regions areas, are beginning to change some. What are you watching?
Well, there's a major pattern change that's underway as we speak across the northern hemisphere, and it's one of the more striking changes that you'll ever see at this time of the year. But if you recall, at least if we think about what's been taking place in northern areas of the central U.S., it was one of the very mildest November through January periods on record across and adjacent the Dakotas. And those records go back 126 years. What's taking place at the moment, though, is all that mild air is going away as we speak and is going to be replaced by an exceptionally cold air mass. And that will include the polar vortex moving into the U.S. at times. And what that means is that the core of coldest air across the northern hemisphere, which is normally near the Arctic Circle, is going to dip far to the south and reach the United States at times as we move into the middle of February. And that will cause a temperature change from that three-month period that we talked about through February that will rival some of the largest changes we've ever seen in our record for the Dakotas and Montana. And some of those records go back pretty far. We're probably going to end up being one of the largest temperature changes that we've seen since either 1936, 1989, or 2019. So this is an unusual setup that's starting.
How deep will the cold get? I mean, what do the temperatures look like?
Well, it's going to get down to Interstate 80 and maybe even a little bit below that, and especially from Illinois onto the west and north. So the coldest states are going to be the Dakotas and Montana and Minnesota, which is what you might expect in this situation. But it also will dip into Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois at times. We're looking for temperatures to drop into the minus 10s at night several mornings starting on Saturday and Sunday from Interstate 80 on to the north. In fact, we could see temperatures into the minus 20s and even the minus 30s in Minnesota. So this is a really unusual setup that we have taking place. Whenever this happens, you need to think a little bit about wheat, because if it gets far below zero, you can have damage to the wheat crop. Well, most of the wheat crop across the United States, at least in the plains, is snow-free at the moment, so we need snow to protect it. We can see that what's going to happen is that as each one of these Arctic fronts moves through, because there will be more than one shot of cold air going forward, as each one of those moves through, it will lay down a blanket of snow right in front of it. And so we think that's going to protect a lot of the wheat that's snow-free in the plains, and only leaving small portions of wheat in Montana and North Dakota snow-free and also way below zero. So that's kind of where the threat is. But at this point, we think that snow is going to protect a lot of the wheat. But of course, you need to keep in mind that's going to disrupt logistics. Rivers are going to freeze over. We're going to see snows here and there disrupting roadway and maybe even rail logistics, simply because temperatures are going to get so cold.
How long does it last?
Well, from what we can see, it's going to last on and off for about 10 to maybe even 14 days. So at least through the middle of February. It's hard to say once we get into the last 10 to 15 days of February what things might look like. But at least for the next 10 days, it's going to be unusually cold.
Is there a correlating pattern change in South America? And I don't know whether they're related or not, but it appears that they've had a pretty good change in their weather conditions, too.
Well, certainly weather is connected all across the world because it's one gigantic air mass. But whether or not what's happening here right now can predict what's happening in South America is a little bit of a stretch because they're just so far apart and divided by tropical air at the equator. But all that said, there's also a pattern change taking place in South America. What we're seeing there is also unusual, but maybe not as anomalous as what's happening in the United States at the moment. But basically, we've been talking about the lack of rain for most of the growing season in central and northern Brazil. And even though, yes, it has been raining here and there over the last 4 to 6, maybe even 8 weeks, it hasn't been a big dump of rain that would totally wipe out the conversation. But we're now going to get that, it looks like, because a cool front is moving right into a tropical air mass. And that's going to turn those central and northern areas considerably wetter. Now, this is occurring as soybeans are maturing and they're almost ready to be harvested, so the timing of that isn't ideal. As they move to the south, though, it's going to dry out a lot in Argentina and southern Brazil and even Paraguay. And even though dry weather in February is not exactly an ideal setup, it will be cooler than normal over much of the next week, and that will negate some of the impacts or potential impacts of dry weather. Now, of course, it's going to need to rain again, especially in Argentina. And it's not so much because it's dry in Argentina. It's more or less because February is the wettest month of the year across the country. So having a dry spell right now is not well timed for soybean development. There's still time for things to improve, though, because soil moisture is generally okay, and there is a little bit of rain on the horizon, especially in 10 to 14 days. But at some point later on this month, we're going to need to see the pattern turn wetter.
And Mike, I want to ask you one other question, which farmers have been asking over and over, or thinking about coming back to the Northern Hemisphere, because the conditions had been so very dry in the western part of the Corn Belt. Many are of the opinion that that will have a large impact potentially on Northern Hemisphere crops, corn and soybeans in particular, in the summer months. Is there very much correlation?
There's not a whole lot of correlation. You can look back into the past and think about some of the dry winters that we had, and even some of the dry ones that started in the autumn and went all the way through the winter, which is what this one is shaping up to look like, especially in the plains and the western Corn Belt. And you can see situations where that continued right through the spring and into the summer. Those would be situations like we had in 1988 and 1936. But you also can see other situations where it started to rain and you never thought about those years again. So it's a little too early to be overly concerned about that. But we do know the weather pattern is a little bit odd. We had a bit of a drought back in the plains in the fall, and it's not totally broken yet. Here we are now switching from this very mild winter to suddenly one of the coldest periods where you can see in the month of February. And some of those years we talked about, which is also interesting, were 1989, 1936, and 2019. And all three of those years have some weather problems, but for different reasons. If you think about what happened in 1936, we just talked about it, but that year was a year where drought basically started and then lasted right on into the summer. In fact, that was one of the worst droughts, if not the worst drought, on record in the central United States, which is also part of the Dust Bowl years. If you go to 1989, also was a drought, especially for the winter wheat crop in the plains, but corn and soybeans that year didn't really have that bad of a crop. If you look at 2019, though, it was the opposite story. That was a year where it kept raining and raining and raining and raining, and we had a lot of trouble planting in the beginning of the growing season and even into June. But those are different scenarios. We had one scenario that turned out to be really wet in the spring, and we had two that ended up being dry. So which one are we in now? It's just, there's just not enough information or not enough data points to draw strong conclusions. But we would agree with all the producers out there that are observing this, that something odd is taking place and has taken place to this point. But whether or not that's going to lead to a drought or lead to a flood or just lead to a great growing season, we're just not comfortable talking too much about that yet.
Well, we'll depend on you to try to come up with some answers as more data points continue to come in and time passes. Thank you so much, and we will talk with you again next week.
Yeah, that sounds great. We'll have our gloves and mittens on and hats and all that by then, I'm sure.
Yeah, it'll be a cold one. Hey, thanks much, Mike.
You're welcome.
Mike Tenuras with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.